Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark. And here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point today is the great, the wonderful Elena Kathleen. Elena, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Joe. I'm excited to chat this evening.
Amen to that. Yeah. How are you doing today?
Good. It was a pretty good, productive day. So, you know, no complaints on this side.
Yeah. Awesome. So for a little background information, I've known Elena for several years. I mean, maybe 10 years now, Elena, close.
Close, probably.
Probably 8 years, maybe. It's probably better. So Elena does my hair. She cuts it, helps me style it, tells me, hey, it looks horrible, or hey, that looks great. And she's fantastic. She's the best in the business. And that's a little bit of background on my end. But Elena, how about you kind of fill in the gaps? Who are you? What's your story? Where are you from?
Well, like you said, Joe, my name is Elena Kathleen. I am from Akron, Ohio. I was born and raised here. I still live here. I make the trek all the way up towards Cleveland to cut Joe's hair. Moved around a little bit, you know, in my 20s. I was in the Army before I started doing hair. And since then, I got into this industry. And currently, I am the director of education at Bella Capelli in Westlake. I also, our salon is an Aveda salon. I work for Aveda corporately as well. I work for their North American artistic team for styling, where I get to work with a really phenomenal group of women. And we help to create educational content in styling for Aveda in our North American region. I am also a cutting educator for them as well. And I work for their like runway and editorial. We do some photo shoots sometimes. And then I work at New York and London Fashion Week.
I mean, it's incredible. Like the things that you just rattled off are stupendous. Like when I said best in the business, you just proved it. So
you hype me up, Joe.
No, I mean, it's the truth. So Elena, you are 330 born and raised. How has that influenced you? That's like step one, right? Like I know you're proud of Akron. You love Akron. You're still here, still in, well, still there. So give me a little bit of that. What was it like growing up there?
You know, I had a very pretty normal childhood, you know, wonderful parents. I have a sister. Very, you know, typical. We lived in North Hill. An area of Akron, just outside of downtown. A lot of Catholic Italians in our area. I'm Italian. I always, you know, being that I also always went to Catholic school. I went to St. Martha's growing up, and then St. Vincent, St. Mary for high school. I think that, you know, going to Catholic schools or private schools kind of influences you for sure as a person. You know, but I grew up in a very family-oriented community, as well as a family, you know, always spending time with my family and, you know, our going to a Catholic school in a small community, you know, you were always with the same people all the time, you know, and I think that influenced, you know, my life now. Again, I still live here and enjoy it here. And it's, you know, I've been a bazillion places, you know, here in the States and abroad, and it just feels like home, you know? So I like being here, and my family is close and my wife's family is very close to us. And so it's nice. It's kind of influenced me, I guess, in that way that I'm still a very family oriented community type person.
Yeah. That's incredible. You really are great with people too. And I feel like we find people that are family oriented are naturally good with other people.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like,
You grow a large Italian family, you have to speak up.
Absolutely. You're going to get swept under the rug. It's so funny. That's awesome. No, that's really great because in your profession, you're talking to people all day too. So
yes,
you knew it from very early on that you could do it. And then you said, as you grew, you kind of bounced around a little bit before joining the Army. What was that gap like? What, anything pivotal during those kind of years?
So I joined right out of high school. So it was just like places that I had, you know, went and whatnot with the military.
Amazing. Yeah. And so you were in the army. Again, how do you want to unfold that for us a little bit? What was that like? I'm sure that had to be a crazy adventure. How did you come to the decision that you're like, you know, this is for me, this is what I want to do right now?
That's an interesting question. I feel like I have probably been asked that question a million times, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even know that I have a really great answer for it. Like I said, I joined, out of high school, young, and I've always, I think, even as a kid, been a person, I enjoy challenge. I enjoy something that I have to work at almost. And it was almost just this thing that I thought that I could do and kind of wanted to prove to myself that I could do it.
Yeah.
So, it's I, like I said, I've been asked that many times in my life, and I just think it really boils down to this was something in my life that I just felt like I needed to do.
Sure.
For myself, for a lot of different reasons, maybe, but I think it was just this innate feeling inside me that I was like, I need to do this.
Yeah.
And I did not tell really anybody that I was doing it prior to doing it. So, and with that, I've been asked a lot, like for people that are going to join, or maybe like their child is thinking about it, and what are my thoughts? Like, is it good? Is it bad? I think it's like any other thing. At the end of the day, it's a job,
For sure.
And it's however a job that I think only the person doing it can make the decision. I don't think you can really let other people's opinions weigh in on that decision.
Yeah, I feel like that's profound because it's, while it is a job, it's very, I mean, it's some crazy, there are some crazy things that go on in the armed forces that you all have been through. I'm not, I mean, I don't even know, but I know that that's the truth. So I know that you can agree with that. And so, yeah, it makes sense that it's only the person who's going to be potentially in it that can say, hey, like, this is for me, I can handle this, or maybe not even so much.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely people that join and then really find out whether they can handle it or not.
Yeah. And so how
It's
long were you in, Elena?
Say that again.
I'm sorry, how long were you in?
9 years.
9 years. Okay. And so within those 9 years, what were some of the different places you went to, some of the crazier stories or not so crazy stories that you could kind of share with us?
I did my basic training at Fort Jackson in South Carolina. I went after you do that, you go to, it's called AIT, it's your advanced individual training. It's like, for lack of a better way to explain it, it's like college almost. So this is
Okay.
where the job that you have enlisted for, that's where you then go and learn that. So basic training is like basic training, right? It's for kind of foundational skills, I guess, of being a soldier. And then once you do that, then like the people that you went through basic training with may not be at the same AIT that you are,
Got
because
it.
they're a mechanic, or they're a helicopter repair, or your communications, or your infantry, different jobs. So it's where you learn your job, basically. So to me, I when people ask, like, I feel like it's like college. It's where like you learn that skill that then is going to become your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and what was yours, Elena?
I was a 25 uniform at the time. That job, I did electronic warfare programming and radio networking communications.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so I was there. I went was at Fort Gordon in Augusta, Georgia. I did some time at Fort Hood. I ended at Fort Knox in Kentucky. Was overseas in the Middle East. So some more fun places than others at times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
During the war over there,
Correct.
overseas. Yeah. Wow. So what was it like waking up and being in just war territory?
That's a good question. I don't know that you're asking that question. I don't know. To be honest, sometimes it's, you're there for so long, you just like, it's like you're waking up, like you're waking up at home, right? Mm-hmm. Just, it's Tuesday morning and I'm going to get up and this is what's on the schedule for the day. And then other times, just in a very honest way, you wake up and you're just kind of like, oh shit, mm-hmm. this is where I'm at. It's yeah. like, you know, you just kind of have this thought every once in a while, like, wow, this is wild, you know? And I joined after September 11th. So it was like, I knew that this would eventually happen, but then every once in a while, you're just kind of like there and you're just like, wow, this is actually real life. This is, yeah. you know, yeah. Cause it's odd. And I think sometimes people don't think about it. You have days that are like days at home. I mean, you're there 365, right? 24/7, mm-hmm. but you might have a day where you're not going out on a convoy or you're not, you know, you don't have, today's maybe your day off.
Oh, wow. Not, yeah. I never thought about that.
It's not like you're going and doing something. You're just yeah. not having, you know, a task that you have to accomplish, you know, today on Thursday.
That's so interesting.
People yeah. play a lot of cards over there okay. and, you know, and stuff like that. But so I think it's both. I think sometimes you wake up and you're like, wow, this is reality. And this is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. And then other days you just wake up and you're like, oh, it's Thursday. And this is what I got to do today. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Were there ever times where you felt really like threatened?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's inevitable for anybody for okay. the most part. I don't really know. I would be interested to see if somebody had a different answer.
Sure.
That yeah, at so, one point you felt really anxious or very, you know, very nervous about the situation at hand.
As someone who's clearly like, I've never been anywhere near any of that. I, for whatever reason, envision like I say with kind of the waking up thing, like I picture waking up and I don't know what kind of noise you're hearing or what kind of, like, I would just imagine great kind of angst or tension. For whatever reason, just kind of in the air. I don't know why, but it just feels like that's what it should be, because at any given moment it could just, that could be it.
I mean, that's a true story. sometimes it was like, we'll say semi quiet, and quiet meaning, I mean, there's always like generators going and you know, things like that, that are keeping your electricity going mm-hmm. and stuff of that nature. So is it ever like silent? It's almost like you switched up walking outside here at night and you know, hear like crickets or things yeah. of that, or you walk outside and you hear like generators and stuff like that. And then I lived on an Air Force base there. So you would, you know, hear helicopters a lot or things like that. Mm-hmm. But we were really in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
So it wasn't like, you know, and there's not, in some areas, there's more built up like cities, for lack of a better term to call it. But more southern, it's very desolate. It's like mountain ranges and a lot of flat land. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't anything, no immediate like civilization right outside of where our FOB was at.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And how were your interactions with all those people like that you did interact with when the time came, when pleasant, not pleasant? I don't know. Just
so. I mean, interaction for the most part was fine. A few times we like being a woman, like, and my hair was still like short then. It was just extremely easy. It's very hot over there.
Okay.
But, you know, like being a woman, like you're still advised, like when you're outside of the FOB, like you should have something on your head.
Okay.
Things like that. And because something else I don't think people think about too often And I honestly don't know that I did beforehand. You know, I mean, I'm 35 and I mean, what, we've been over there since 2001. It's 2022. So for 21 years, that's a very long time. So there's people in the world that they only know the US being a presence in the Middle East, right?
Right. Yeah, so wild.
It is, right? It's like crazy to think.
Yeah.
And you often, you know, you see what's in the media and you get this negative opinion. There are bad people everywhere.
Of course.
We see it here. Unfortunately, we are living in a time in the US where people go to the grocery store and are getting shot. It's like wild, right?
Right.
But you also have to be respectful of, like, there's people over there that this is just where they were born. And they're literally just like you and I are, trying to live their life, or they have a family and they're trying to raise their family in, you know, unfortunately unsavory conditions for a lot of them. You know what I mean? So it's like also about respectful to those people that, like, probably didn't even want us there, you know, don't want us there, don't want tanks running through their little villages and things of that nature. So, you know, little things like that, like keeping your head covered or whatever. That, I guess, that was my point.
Yeah. Cause Elena, I mean, that's the truth. That's what I feel like. There's just a dichotomy of, like, there are people, right? You're there on a mission. You are armed and you are there on a mission. And then there's people that are just, like, going to the store. And that's the thing that I think, who have not, again, haven't been there. I can't even really picture it. Like, you can picture it, but it doesn't feel real because it is such a dichotomy that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
Like, it feels more like you think of, like, Gettysburg, right? I'm like, okay, there are two teams and they're, like, they're two sides and they fight. Like, that's what we always picture, but that's not it.
You think, like, the Civil War and they walk up to each other, muskets, and they're like, ooh, who's going to do this? It's like, that's like not three, two, how one, that go. Happens any longer. We are way in an age of technology and, you know, things of that nature where it's just different. So, you know, I think, like you just said, there's a lot of people that's kind of the concept that they have.
Yeah.
And it's like, and not so much.
Wild. It is. That's the word I keep thinking of. It's wild because there's so many people that are, like, affected by it just every day. And to live in a war area just sounds stressful or sounds less than desirable at the least. So, like you're saying, it's crazy that people are born there and just trying to do their thing, but that those are the circumstances that they're given.
Right. Because just like I said, you know, there's people here who have never lived in a time where we're not a presence there. There are people there who have never lived in a time where their country is not war torn.
Yeah. Like, cause I'm 23, so I don't remember any of 9/11. Was alive, right. But I don't remember any of it. And I mean, when we started going to school and, like, you start remembering this stuff, I remember, you know, the US is over in the Middle East. And that's the truth. So for the entirety of my active memory, for no better way of putting it, like, yeah, we were there. That's where we've been.
Yeah.
Do you have any other pivotal stories from your time in the service that you wanted to share? Anything that you're like, oh, this is kind of neat or interesting or worth addressing?
Because
I feel like we can go on about the lifestyle of it for
you know, just really, like, I some of the most important people in my life came from that time in my life. And I think more so than anything, like, that is something that I take with me, is those people, even if I may not, you know, speak to regularly or anything of that nature, but, you know, it's people that you went through life, something in life with, that a very small majority of people have any concept of. You know, so that to me is, like, the biggest thing that I took with me from that. And I think to being in the service, I guess, kind of helped shape the, like, discipline that I have in my life now to move forward in, you know, a very different career, but in the way that I do, I suppose.
Yeah. I have a couple questions that I do think about that. Like, in a second, I'm curious how it did influence it and like how you decided to make that shift. But two of those two questions that I'm curious about also before that, who, so you've mentioned these people, right? And did you ever have, but you have like a partner, right? Like, don't you have specific kind of like an, like a police officer has like a partner. Do you guys have like a partner or someone that you're specifically close to? Or is that potentially?
So, I mean, not necessarily. No.
Okay.
So called a battle buddy.
Okay.
Interesting phrase. Your battle buddy is other, like you just don't go somewhere by yourself, like overseas, right? Not,
sure.
not necessarily when you're like walking around Fort Knox.
Sure.
But overseas, yes, you have like you are supposed to go in teams of two anywhere you go. But that doesn't have to be the same person.
I see. Okay. Right. So there's not like there was someone
with another human being.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So that was the first one. I'm just curious about that. So it's not like there's a specific person, but you still have those friends that are, you became close with through all those years
The
influences. Yeah. And then the other thing is, how did you decide, or how did you know at the end of those 9 years, like, this is it, I'm ready to go home. I'm assuming go back to Fort Knox. How did you know that this was time to hang it up, basically, is the question.
I was in an accident overseas and I got medically retired.
Wow.
So that was the military's choice.
Okay.
Which then you just said it like a minute ago, that's where that kind of like ended for me. So I took some time off and then thought about what I would like to do next.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. So you're in that accident and you can either expound upon that or not, but they decide for you, like, okay, you're done. And so are you rehabbing at this point? And then you get the news, or is it like you're rehabbing and then if it goes well, you can stay? Or how do they decide, okay, you're done?
There's like a bunch of different factors that go into how that decision.
Were you ready? Like, did you want to be done?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think part of me, yes. And part of me, I did, you know, like what I did. So it was a very interesting time in my life at that point.
Sure.
You know,
have you bounced back? Have you recovered from said accident?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like I'm all right.
Yeah. I mean, you seem great. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It works. Everything's good. So, okay, great. So then you get sent back home and obviously you're healing from this accident in a lot of ways. I would imagine physically, I would imagine mentally. And what an adjustment. You're told like, this is now you have another life. You have a second life basically. And how did that shape you? How did you know, like, okay, how did you come to hair? How did you get over that? That's like coping. You're almost coping with the loss in a unique way.
So I definitely think that's like a thing, right? Like you're coping with this thing that you had and no longer have. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I just took some time off and kind of like thought to myself, like, all right, I'm in my, you know, mid-ish, late-ish 20s. Like I have this like second opportunity to, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
And I had always like been interested in hair. Never necessarily doing hair, just like hair was interesting to me, how people cut their hair, the color of hair. Like when people would look at magazines, like a lot of times, obviously you look at magazines more so for like fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I would always like check out what people's hair looks like.
Okay.
Like intrigued me, right?
Yeah.
And I also enjoyed cooking. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll go to culinary school. But then I decided I like enjoy cooking. Like I just make it up most of the time.
Okay.
Sometimes it turns out well, sometimes it doesn't. So I was like, I feel like if I went to culinary school, I would really just like, I'd have to do it correctly. And I don't think I want to have to do that.
Yeah. I like to make it up. I like to go on the fly. Yeah. Okay. This whole organized thing.
Have to do it this way.
You got to measure.
Yeah, exactly. And so I chatted with a friend of mine who owned a salon. And she had said, like, if I was going to do it, I should go to Aveda. That Aveda, by far, and her salon is actually not an Aveda salon, but she said she went to an Aveda school and basically was like, Aveda is like your Ivy League of going to cosmetology school. So I looked into it, looked into a couple others, and she was correct for sure. So just very oddly took the leap and decided this is what I was going to do.
Wow.
And started going to school.
Okay. So real quick, just for a synopsis sake, will you explain what Aveda is to everyone listening?
Aveda is a global hair brand and company. We are based out of Blaine, Minnesota. I don't even know if I want to say it. I believe we started in the 60s.
Okay.
I hope I'm correct there.
Don't tend to the boss.
Yeah, by a gentleman named Horst. And they have since grown. We are the number one vegan hair care company globally. I actually love working for them because we are such a sustainable company. That's awesome. We do a lot to give back to the environment. The company itself has been recognized by several different global organizations for what we are able to do, not only here in the US, but in a lot of third world countries for the environment. And we are a huge company in helping to provide clean water.
Wow.
A lot of remote areas in the world. So
that's so great.
That is us. We are, like I said, we are completely vegan from our eyeshadows to our hair color to anything in between that, your hairspray, lipsticks, you know, anything. So that is a very small glimpse into what Aveda is.
That's perfect. Yeah, thanks. I mean, I use, you know, the two things like that paste and then the potion, as we call it. And they're both great. I love the product. So they're effective on top of it all. And my hair's all messy from the day, but that's okay.
So, very good, Joe.
Thanks, Elena. Okay, great. So you had just finished in the service. You're talking to a friend. She gives you this idea to go to an Aveda salon. You're like, okay, I love it. And then here we go. What happens from there?
I started at the Aveda school. At the time it was in Rocky River. Okay. It moved. It's in Strongsville. It's called Brown Aveda. Went there very shortly before I got done with school. I had met Sandy and Serena. They are the owners of Bella Capelli. They are two very wonderful women to work for. In fact, they are, I believe, next week celebrating their 25th anniversary as which is a big deal. There's, you know, hair salons come and go a lot. Their staff 100% speaks for themselves. They have staff members that have been there since the day they opened the doors 25 years ago.
My God.
So it actually kind of gives me a military feel. They have a very family, community oriented salon and staff. So yeah, I started working for them shortly before I was done with school and kind of felt like, you know, I was at this point in my late 20s and I needed to, you know, I felt like I needed to hit the ground running and I wanted, you know, I had met a couple people while I was in school that came into the school and gave a talk or gave a class, you know, from different parts of the industry, not even necessarily people that at the time worked for Aveda, but that really showed me other aspects of the industry other than just, you know, being behind the chair. And it inspired me. And I kind of, you know, I remember going into my interview at Bella and I was like, so these are a couple things that I would like to do. And fast forward a few years, I remember sitting in a review and one of my bosses was like, we've never really had somebody sit down and say they were going to do this in an interview. And then several years later, those things have actually, you know, all of those things have taken place.
Yeah. Congrats, Elena. That's killer. Yeah.
So I, you know, like I said, I started there, started working in their intern program full-time when I got done with school and got my license. Started doing hair. And then a friend of mine that I actually knew like way before I was in the industry or even really associated with Aveda in any way. I knew her through a mutual friend of mine. I realized then, after I had started in school, exactly what she meant years before when I had met her, that she worked for Aveda and so on and so forth. So I talked to her a little bit and I was like, you know, I want to do something more, but I have no idea. Like, I mean, how do you even do that?
Sure.
And she talked to me about, excuse me, the Aveda Runway program.
Okay.
And as far as I know, we are the only company that has a program of this nature. You take a runway, either styling class, hair styling class, or makeup class, and you then get to work with Aveda's heads of runway for hair and makeup. And then there's kind of like a core team, which is what I'm a part of now. Mm-hmm. But you get to work with them. You go, you take this class, you learn some skills, and then that fashion week, you get to work with the team in, you know, in a backstage capacity, doing hair or doing makeup. So I did that and it was wild and chaotic. And I'm not sure what I expected when I went the first time. But I loved it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I'm into it, you know? So I kept taking the class and kept taking the class until I was kind of invited to come in and work with the core team and do that. And, you know, worked my way up in that aspect and, you know, was still during that working behind the chair and doing all mm-hmm. that. Myself always taking education, always trying to learn more and better myself and my skills. And working with the runway program and the head of our team for that. Truthfully, I believe is really what kind of gave me the foundation to grow and be better. I think still, I just got done being there for Fashion Week in September. I think even, you know, years later, every single time I go, I learn not only from the gentleman, his name is John Raymond, who heads our team, but I learn from the other team members that I work with. I learn from the new, you know, participants that come and work with us. I think I'm in an industry where you always have to be learning.
Sure.
And that, again, doing that kind of led to the other opportunities that I've been able to take advantage of with Aveda and with my salon and such.
That's incredible because you've made such a jump going from really not knowing much about the industry to being really such a leader, right? I mean, you're on that core team, you're doing all these crazy things in the field. That's a big jump in a short amount of time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, seriously. Do you attribute it just to all of the outside resources and then that runway program? I mean, the discipline that you had mentioned from the service had to fill into that because that's a lot of stuff you were juggling there.
Yes. I mean, I definitely, it's a lot of hard work. I work a lot.
Okay.
But it's worth it to me, right? Like granted, everybody has your days where you go to work, even if you absolutely are in love with your job, but you're just like, oh, just not in the mood. But I mean, it's everybody, but I, you know, have been very fortunate to meet the right people, and have opportunities to work with them and be mentored by them and learn from them. Like I said, not just with Fashion Week, I, you know, have opportunities to work on different photo shoots that Aveda does or work with different photographers who are amazing, you know, photographers and doing hair for that and stuff like that. And I think, you know, you're learning, I'm learning from every single person that I come in contact with always. So I think starting out and again, you know, putting the effort in and working towards what I wanted. And I still want to keep going. So I'm still mm-hmm. working at that every day. But again, I was very fortunate to be put in some places and with some people who are really not only for our company as Aveda, but just in the industry in general, leaders, global leaders in our industry. You know, and I think putting in the hard work for them and showing up and doing my best every time, you know, it then leads to more and more opportunities, right?
Absolutely.
I have said many times in my life, I think that you could start as a fry cook at McDonald's and you could be the CEO of McDonald's one day if that's really what you want to do. And if, you know, you are willing to put in the work and the discipline and are motivated enough to want something enough, you will do whatever that path looks like to go from point A to point Z. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You're charismatic and you have that willingness to learn and such a drive to learn. How important do you think it is to A, show that, and how do you, and then also B, the importance of a question? Because I think in general, we, here I go, spewing my opinion without it being even asked. And that's my whole point.
I would love to hear it, Joe.
Thank you. In general, I think we as a society don't value questions because perhaps it's because we just spew stuff out there all the time. Like you could tweet something, put it on Facebook, throw it on Instagram. We just, all we do is just post. We just give and we never ask and then take. Not like a selfish way, but just in general.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I think it's absolutely important to always keep learning, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you show that you want to learn by showing up. I remember the first time I took the runway class, right? So I'd never been to New York City in my life. I'm in this room. I had been out of hair school for 6 months. And I was like, oh, what am I doing here? This is like, you know, but I wanted it. And I remember being at the class at the Master's Institute in New York for Aveda. And they had given us like an hour to go eat lunch. So I don't know any of these other people in the class. I'm by myself. Don't know New York City at all. And so I went and grabbed something at this little like market that's around the corner that I have now since been to 1,000 times.
Okay. It's a staple.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's quick and easy and around the corner if you're at the Institute. Perfect. And at the time there was a little, I don't know, sitting area, I guess. Mm-hmm. Had like some benches and a little greenery in the middle of New York City, right?
Yeah.
Across the street from the Institute. And I'm sitting there and I'm eating and there was a guy who was assisting John, who teaches the class, who's the head of our runway. And he sat down and he's like, oh, you know, what do you think? I know it's your first time coming, like blah, blah, blah. And we chatted for a minute. And I remember asking him how did you start? Like, how did you get, now you assist teaching the class and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And he said something to me that has stuck with me since I started. He said, I just always say yes. And I just always say yes. And I have done that ever since. So I think that's how you show that you're willing to learn, right? You show up, I think have to not have an ego about it. You know, like I said earlier, like I'm going to learn from these people who are at the head of our industry. I also can learn something from somebody who's helping our team for the first time.
Totally.
You know, so you show up and you just are there. You're just present and you're involved and I think there's no task too menial. And if somebody asks you to do something, you do it and you do it with a smile on your face and that's fine. You know, whether you're like, oh, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this? And other times you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe they want me to do this. Like how, you know, this is amazing and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of how you show that you want to learn and you want to grow.
Absolutely. It's incredible. And it's funny how, like, when you were telling that story to me, you kind of skipped over the, oh, like, how you doing? The blah, you go blah, blah, blah. And you say that right about this conversation that of course initially was surface level, like, oh, how's it going? And then you took it to that next level and you asked the questions that mattered and you were willing to engage with this guy and hear what he had to say.
Yeah.
And then now look, I mean, here you are talking about it and you've been doing this for X amount of years, enough that you feel confident in it. I'm curious, what is going on at these shows. So it's fashion week and they're showing off the outfits, and you guys are doing the hair and then the makeup. So you're on the hair, right? Like, it's your...
Yes. You do not want me to do makeup.
Heard. Got it. Okay. I don't want you doing any makeup on me anyway. So.
All right. Well, good. I was hoping at your next appointment you wouldn't ask for it, but I never know.
No. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking maybe some blush, some eyeshadow and stuff too. I was thinking if you could, just the easies. And so what goes on there? What are they showcasing? Like, what's happening at this fashion week?
So all shows can be different. Some are extremely similar. There's some staple buildings that hold runway shows during fashion week.
Got it.
Kind of the lower portion of Manhattan is consumed by it during that week. Especially now, you know, with influencers and social media, stuff like that. I mean, people, you know, it's a thing, it's an event, you know, but it really does though. I mean, it was something I never really thought of before I started doing it, but like, people are always like, oh, you know, I see this fashion on the runway and it's like weird and who would wear that? But I can literally see things that I see on a runway that have been broken down, and now a somewhat version is an H&M for $24.99 for your mass consumption. You know what I mean?
Yes. So
it does. It's like, there's like high fashion, and then there's, you know, your Saks or your, you know, Nordstrom's, your kind of middle level type stuff. And then, you know, your affordable fashion, like I said, like an H&M or places like that. But all of those things, the things, you know, that you put on every day that you think are nothing, a lot of them have been broken down and are influenced by the fashion. Right. I think that's definitely also true of hair. I think Fashion Week kind of sets some new hair trends, you know, every season, but I mean, really at the shows. So part of what I do now, myself, and there's a team of us. Normally when we go, we call it a test. So Aveda has a lineup of the designers that we're going to work with during that week. The head of our team is always there. And then myself, and there's like a group of us that will rotate in and out on tests. You meet with the designer, 99% of the time, you know, the designer will show you the collection, and then they'll have like a mood board.
Okay. Nice. Okay.
Right. They'll a little bit describe like what the vibe of their collection is, what they're trying to say. Maybe, you know, their hair ideas are, you know, maybe it's like more romantic type clothing. So that's the type of hair they want to go with it. Or maybe it's romantic clothing and they want to really edge it out. So they want some like edgy hairstyle. Right. Yeah. So it just depends. We do a test, and that's again, just a couple of us at that point. What happens there is they have a model or two that are already cast in their show.
Okay.
They come, the hair and the makeup team do the hair, do the makeup, so that the day of, you know exactly what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. Your average show, I feel like, is 25 to 35 models. We just did this past season, which was a really cool show. Puma had their very first runway show.
That's sick.
Did the hair for that, and it was really cool, but they had 70 models.
Wow. Okay.
You know, we also did a show this season that had 10 models. So it just, it varies and it depends. Right. But so we go do this test that way. When we get to the show, that group of us who have went to that test and know what this hair is going to look like, and we take photos, we'll take notes on what product that we use to accomplish the look, all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
Right.
Awesome.
So we are as prepared as you can be for a somewhat uncontrollable situation. Okay. Right. Yeah. So we get there the day of, we'll grab a first model that comes in, you sit them down. Our lead will show the whole team. Now, you know, if there's 40 models, we're going to have probably 20 people there, 25 people there. Right. So we show the whole team. This is, you know, real quick, you do it. This is what it's going to be. And then the team then goes and produces that on the models.
That's incredible.
So we're all doing it. We're all helping each other. it's definitely an environment where, you know, and please don't get me wrong in any way, there's just some things I can't do, right?
Sure.
It's a very team atmosphere of like, hey, this part of this look, I can't do it. So you just grab somebody that can.
Yeah, nice.
You know, it's that kind of an environment. While we're doing hair, there's photographers back there. They're taking pictures. There's always these ridiculously bright lights that are on these mirrors that most of the time we don't use. Okay. There's people doing makeup. If it's getting really close to the show time, you might be working on somebody's hair and there's a makeup artist standing, you know, the person's in the chair and you're behind them doing hair. The makeup artist is in front of them doing their makeup. And
oh my God,
you know, and then they're like, oh, it's time. You got to get dressed. And then everybody gets up and goes to the dressing area. As far as models, they get dressed. They'll move into like the backstage area. And sometimes the backstage area is the get dressed area. There's oftentimes not a separation there. You know, and then there's a team of us back there waiting, you know, final touches. Are they, maybe there's more than one look on that the models are going to walk, come back, change very quickly. In fact, it's wild to me. I've never seen people change clothes so fast in my life. Right. Second, and there's like seven people helping somebody change their clothes.
Oh my God.
You
every
know,
part of your body has to be moving.
If you know, something wild happens when they change and we have to like fix it really quick or whatever. Sure. And then they 3 to 4 hours worth of prep, they walk down a runway in 10 minutes and we move on to the next one and repeat.
My goodness. And how is it different than the one in London, right? London?
It's the same.
They're all the same. Okay. Just different. So,
it's the same as far as what we're doing. It's the same as far as kind of what backstage looks like. There are four fashion capitals in the world. It is New York, London, Paris, and Milan. And so as it goes, like it will start in New York. It'll be there for a week. The day after it ends in New York, it's going to be in London for a week, then to Paris, then to Milan.
Holy cow.
Okay. So oftentimes you get like Milan is kind of like the mecca of fashion.
Okay.
So you'll get more there, like your really high-end designers. Like if you're showing at Milan Fashion Week, you people already know your name.
Got it. Yeah. Sure.
And not that that's not true in New York, but And it's not that obviously anybody showing in New York is not as important as this or that or in London or in Paris.
I gotcha.
But it kind of grows as you get from city, major city to major city.
Have you ever done the one in Milan?
I have not, Joe. No. There's a couple things that I would like to add to my resume one day.
Sure.
One of those is Milan Fashion Week.
Okay. And how are you going to get there? Notice you're going to get there.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, I know you are.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, you know, if Aveda ever wants to take the team there, let's do it. I'm ready.
Okay.
But I do know just a couple of people that have done it and kind of how they've went about that. So it's more so a little bit, not working with a brand, but working with like going through like an agency that puts teams together and such, for some of the major heads of our industry who will run teams over there. And that, again, that's not just people from Aveda that, I mean, these are like people from all aspects of the industry, from all different countries, you know, that come in and do that and run teams. For lack of a better way to explain it, you know, these are your top rated athletes of the hair industry, LeBron James of the hair industry that are like the best of the best running, you know, over there.
Speaking of, who are some of the coolest or what are there some of the coolest people you've gotten to interact with or kind of work for, maybe do their hair or wherever you want to take that. Yeah. I feel like you've had to have had some sweet influences or sweet experiences if you've had those opportunities.
So I got to meet some pretty amazing people, in my definition of what that might be.
Sure.
This is like really cliche, but I really feel like the people that I have met from Aveda, I think that's why I've chosen to stay. And since I've been in this industry, I've never worked for someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a handful of people, you know, at Aveda, from people actually that do hair to people that work corporate that have nothing to do with hair, that are just extraordinary people that believe in what myself and other artists for Aveda do and allow us and give us the platform to do that.
That's great.
There's a lot of it, you know, I guess it takes a village, right?
Right. Yeah. You need those people, because otherwise you're not gonna be able to do your work. Yeah.
I mean, just the so many different people. I would have to say the head of our runway, John Raymond, has been a huge influence on, mm-hmm. you know, my career, just personally, as far as teaching me. I was very fortunate to be able to be mentored by him when I am working Fashion Week and, you know, doing some other things. The head of our, program is at Aveda, period. Her name is Antoinette Beaners, another just out of this world, incredible creative mind when it comes to hair. Ellen Ruiz, Janelle Giesen. I mean, there's like a bazillion people, just, right? My team members on my North American team. I can't not give her a shout out. We'll call her my partner in crime that I met through Aveda, through the runway program. We took the class the very first time together. Her name is Lydia. And I don't think I would, you know, handle the stress of things sometimes as well without her.
Yeah.
Her and another best friend of mine, Maria, you know, so people who mentor me, people who are, you know, close friends to me, like I said, my whole North American team, we consist of 6 women who are just absolutely incredible. I've gotten to, you know, I always also like look outside of our company. There's, you know, a million people out here that do amazing education and have so much that contribute. You know, so several people that I just take classes from, or, you know, find what they do in the industry very interesting. So maybe not even people that I know, you know, personally in any way, but just follow and, you know, pay attention to their work, I guess, and what they're doing. That.
To someone trying to get into the field, Elena, what would kind of be your piece of advice to them?
I mean, honestly, I think it's like what I said earlier, you know, about you start as a cook at McDonald's and you want to be the CEO. It's, mm-hmm. I believe it, of any industry that you go into, you know, people are always like, oh, it's not, you know, what you do. It's like who you know, or however that saying goes. I'm probably not saying it correctly, but who you know can only get you so far, right? Like in anything that you do in life, if you want to move to a different level, or you want, you know, to do this or do that, whatever that is for you and in whatever field you're in, I think you just absolutely either have to give it or your all, or realize, you know, that maybe what you were reaching for is you like want to step it back a little bit. Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just think that's it. Like you just, if this is the way you want to go, if this is the industry that you want to be in, there's every opportunity out there, but like anything else in life, you have to find them. I mean, they don't, you know, things don't just drop into your lap.
Right.
You know, you have to go out there and you have to put the effort in, you know, and things of that nature. And if it's something that you really, really want in life, I think there's, if you're motivated enough, you're going to do it no matter what that looks like.
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's good. So get into school, do the thing.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Vic Blends at all?
What?
Vic Blends is his name. He's a barber. He's out of Atlanta. I believe it's Atlanta. And he's a barber, and he started kind of the same thing, like kind of just making his way. And essentially now he's trying to turn himself into like a whole brand kind of thing. He's gone viral on most social media platforms and is, I would say, like an influencer of that industry.
Okay. I'll be immediately picking him up on Instagram when we get done here.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, Vic VIC blends, just, you know, blends. And I like him because he does a lot of speaking too. He does a lot of motivational stuff, but his basic gist is that he would go up and he would quote unquote bless people with a free haircut. And so he goes and I'll talk to him and just like, have you seen them now?
Talking about.
Yeah. Tattoos head to toe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So he's like, oh, my, bless you with a free haircut. Right. And he'll kind of do his thing. And I love that he always just takes the time to talk to these people. And that's really the basis of the free haircut. Right. So that's him aside, but my kind of point in bringing him up was his thing is like, when you start something, you got to support your people too. And like, so he always says, he's like, if someone else is trying to do hair, he's like, get your friend, like do your friend's hair and that kind of thing and rely on your people. And I feel like that's a huge part in starting anything. Like you got to rely on your people around you to support you and to build you up. And be honest with you, if you don't have those people around you, like, then why are the people that are around you if they're not those kind of people? And that's the truth. I mean, I'm not going to mince words about that.
I could not agree more. I have a handful of friends that will probably never admit it as to not hurt my feelings, but they for sure got some bad haircuts at the start. Let me practice. Let me, you know, give it a go, see how it went. You know, so yeah, it is. It's very important to have those people in your life. I am very fortunate. I have a wonderful group of friends, a wonderful family who have always been very supportive. And as you know, kind of cliche as it sounds, my wife is like my MVP. She literally supports me in anything I want to do, you know, has encouraged me and anything that I could possibly need, you know, she's there and supportive. And it's an important thing. I mean, I think you can do it on your own if you don't have that support system, but I am a very fortunate person that I do have that. And like I said before, coming into the industry, I work in a salon that very much has a supportive environment, from, again, my owners to the men and women that I work with at the salon. We have that very family community atmosphere there. And Aveda, even though being a large corporate global company, has this very homey family feel. And, you know, like I said, I've been fortunate to sometimes, to my own wonder, have been taken into that wonderful family feel Aveda has, and, you know, just could not be more thankful for it.
That's beautiful, Elena. Yeah, I love that you are getting that because you've had it from those days way back in the 330, now all the way into the point where your whole company is based on that same kind of familial drive. And I want to give your wife the credit and the time she deserves, but I'm curious before we go there on just a quick snippet note. We talked tattoos, Vic Blends is covered right head to toe. And so on your right arm, we can see, obviously you have a full sleeve on your right arm. There's one I noticed on your left.
One or two, that's it.
Yeah, one or two. What's kind of, give us some stories, give us a little background on the tattoos. Tattoos fascinate me because you get some really, really interesting stories when you ask people about them, but I'm always asking people, I'm like, why'd you get that? Like, what was the thought process? And to be honest with you, that's the whole idea of the podcast is like, what is the mindset that we have about X, Y, or Z that we do? Why do we do things? Who are we because of our decisions? Like, ultimately, that's humanity. To be human is to have choices. And so long story short, what tell us about some of your tattoos. Give us a little bit of background. And I'd love to hear about it, Elena.
So on my sleeve here, I've actually been itching for a new tattoo, like really bad.
Wild.
For a while.
Yeah.
However, mine, the meaning that they have to me. So basically my whole arm, has either some meaning to my family or my time in service,
okay,
in the military. And different things. I don't know if you can see it very well, but underneath, where's this at? It's like a weird angle. You can't see it as well, but it's like a compass right here. Right. Yeah. And around it has the numbers to my parents' address.
That's so cool. No
matter where I went in the world, like, this is my home. My parents still live in the house I grew up in. I have one for a friend of mine, that I was in the service with, who is no longer with us. That was a very important person to me. I have my parents and my sister's name in here. You know, obviously this is my family, it's my foundation. I actually had like a little space back here that wasn't filled. And I, like I said earlier, I'm Italian. And for the first time in my life this year, I got to go to Italy. And I have a nephew, and his name is Gabriel. And so I had this like empty space, and it was like always there. And I was kind of like, oh, I just feel like it's like not finished at the top. And I was like, we popped out of this hotel that we had just checked into in, we were in Florence, and like 10 feet outside of this hotel was this tattoo shop. I walked in, the dude, we really could not communicate well together. He didn't really speak English. I believe he was speaking Spanish, not Italian. I don't speak Spanish. We kind of communicated. He had an app on an iPad that was helping to translate.
Oh my God.
It's literally just the letter G. But that was like really cool to me because one, it was for my nephew. And then two, I got to get in Italy.
Yeah.
You know, that was really cool. But all of what's here, I have a breast cancer ribbon. My mother had breast cancer. I got that, you know, in support. So everything up here is to my family and to my time in the service. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any, I have other tattoos like on the top of my body. I just don't have any on like the lower half of my body.
Yeah.
And I never really kind of thought that I would, but I've decided I feel like the military was like my life before. And this was like, I don't know. I feel like I've like lived like two kind of separate lives. Right. And
it kind of seems that way, honestly.
What I want to do and what I've been itching for is I have decided I just want to make my whole right side of my body a sleeve, like down my leg as well.
That's cool.
And this is like my life before. And I would like to start the top of my leg, like my life now, and then like below my knee, my life and what I see for the future. So that like just going down my body is like the story of my life.
What a project.
Oh, it's a project. It is timeless. Yeah.
But that's awesome.
Kind of where I'm at with it.
What would do you know what the first one would be in life ahead? What would you get?
Yes, I do. I just like literally need to like schedule it somewhere and go have it done. I would like a vintage pair of shears or scissors, right? We call them shears when you cut hair. Like a very almost like kind of
18. Creepy doctor kind?
No. Like really pretty kind of like, if you literally would Google image search vintage shears, like what I'm talking about would come up immediately. These really pretty kind of like thing type of shears, right? And I want it to the top of it where like your finger holes are to be like like across at the top of my knee and the actual blades to open up around my kneecap and then go from there. No, that is absolutely not what I'm talking
about. This is what keeps coming up. This is what I'm talking about. This is like creepy doctor stuff.
No,
like,
definitely not that, Joe. Not at all.
None of those. Okay. Well, we'll report. I'll go back to that later.
Yeah. Maybe try vintage hair cutting shears. I'm not sure.
I guess. Yeah.
Definitely not. Like,
these all
weird.
Sorry, scary.
Yeah. Those look like something you see in like a old time horror movie where like a dude's like conducting experiments on somebody.
Yeah, it's giving human centipede. I don't want it to give human centipede.
Yeah, that's not at all what I'm going for.
Never.
Never.
No, but awesome. That's really cool. That's really cool. I love the idea too. And I don't know. I mean, I like that they have meaning. Like to me, I like that they have meaning. The random tattoo is kind of like, okay. You know, like it has meaning and there's something behind it too. I love that. And I think that's what makes them all the more like special or noteworthy or whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for sharing that. Yeah. But
I'm not a random tattoo getter.
No, you wouldn't strike me as a random tattoo getter. Not with the discipline and the focus that you have.
True.
So I had mentioned I want to just kind of briefly touch on that. I would love to hear more about your wife, right? You've had, again, like this two life thing, and somewhere in there, at some point, you met someone who now is your wife.
Yeah.
This Give is us true. A lowdown.
True.
Fact.
Fact. Fact. Very much. I met her at shortly before I got out of the service.
Okay.
I lived at Fort Knox at the time. She lived here in Cuyahoga Falls. For the first 6 or 7 months of our relationship, we would take turns on weekends driving 6 hours to see each other.
Wow.
I met her home. I was visiting home one weekend, and I was out with some friends, and a good friend of mine was dating somebody who was friends with my wife at the time. And we, you know, were at a bar having drinks. I'm surprised that she chatted with me, I'm sure. But yeah. And then we, like I said, went back and forth. I moved home. We have been married for 3 years. We have been together almost 10.
Congrats. Wow.
And like I said, I mean, I don't know. I feel like when people say just like really positive things all the time, like, let's be real. I mean, everybody, you know, you're not going to be with somebody for 10 years and like not disagree once in a while, but
100%.
Sometimes think to myself when I hear other people maybe have something to say about their spouse or their partner or whoever it might be, I often stop myself and think like, wow, I'm a very lucky human being. You know,
yeah,
I am very, very fortunate to have her as my partner and, you know, just going through this life day to day with somebody who, I don't know. I feel like it's like such a cliche thing to say, but I mean, she really, I know she's part of the reason I'm so motivated to always be doing better. Like I want to be a better person to be better for her, I guess, or better for us, marriage, or, you know, whatever that means.
Yeah.
I just want to enjoy my life with her. So the harder I work, and she's a very, very hardworking person as well. You know, she's an amazing person for the company she works for and all of that. So we are very much equals in that aspect, you know, and to have somebody that really is my equal and is supportive and there for me, no matter what, is a huge thing and something I'm sure at times I do, but something I do my best to not take for granted.
No, that's beautiful. Yeah. And to have such an awareness, you were so aware and you're very introspective. So I would imagine that there are very few days when you're taking anything for granted, but regardless, she's also lucky to have you too. So it's great that you guys are pushing each other and you have that because, man, you can't let things fall stagnant, right? The second we're not aspiring for something, the second we do take things for granted then. Like that's when you take things for granted. It's when you just fall average because then everything goes average. Your relationship goes average. Your work goes average. You feel average and then just dumps.
Yeah. And I think, you know, everybody, anybody, no matter what, you have like those periods of time where you just like very, you know, like you said, like average and you're just like kind of stagnant or whatever. You know, and I think that's those times are most important when myself or anybody else that has somebody like my wife, you know, or that person in your life, it, you know, doesn't even have to be your spouse or your dating partner per se, but that best friend or that, you know, sibling or parent or whoever might be in your life that helps you to have those periods of time, but move past them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, so mine being my partner, mine being my wife is a very fortunate thing for me. And sometimes with working so much and trying to do a million things in a day, we are very, very opposite human beings in personality sometimes. she helps to balance me out and be more relaxed sometimes.
Nice, nice.
To slow it down from time to time and like take a moment to enjoy the things that I'm, you know, working for or doing or, you know, this and that.
Yeah. You have to just be sometimes. You do have to just be sometimes. I'm glad that you can.
It's a hard task for me, Joe.
I have an unfair question for you, very unfair question, in my opinion. What would you say is your most admired trait of hers? Not to just like sidearm you with that, but
what a question.
Yeah, I'm sure there are tons, but or give a few if you don't want a big one.
Oddly, the very first thing that comes to mind is her ability to be calm.
Okay.
She's a very just like even keeled, calm human being. And that's something I have to work for. So I admire that in her. That's where I think, you know, what I was saying, you know, she really helps me to sometimes slow down. And, you know, people say opposites attract and this and that. And for some people, I think that's true. And for other people, I think that's not true. We are very, very opposite in a lot of ways. I often say, but we share the same weird.
Okay.
You know, I think everybody's like weird in their own way and you don't show it to other people, but she's one of the first, I think the first person in my life that I've ever felt 1,000% the ability to be myself.
Yeah.
And be weird as I want to be, if I feel the need to be.
That's what's up. Like you want that. I mean,
Oh yeah.
Is this like an aside? I mean, you should have that with whoever your person is.
Yes. But yes, she has this innate ability. I think it's just part of her makeup, part of who she, again, innately is to be a calmer person. And whether she is on the inside sometimes, you know, I don't know, but she exudes that. And I admire that about her a lot.
Yeah. That's where you do. You coincide really well.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great testimony to her too. So she's killing it with that. And she's the checks and the balance for you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm so happy that you have someone like that. And especially like you mentioned that it is your wife, like to have someone that you're that close to and choose now to be with for the rest of the day. Like that's a really special thing. Now, not to like totally dampen it too, I feel weird just transitioning here, but I have to ask you because you've had major ups, major downs, and major shifts, maybe not even like ups and downs, but major shifts is more so what I'm trying to say in your life. Do you have any moments where you're like, yeah, I regret this? Or do you have like, what would be your biggest regret in life so far? Because to me, we're all going to have regrets, and there are going to be times that specifically stand out. Like I can look back at some memories. And I'm like, man, I really wish I didn't respond this way. Not that it was necessarily bad, but it's like, man, I don't like the way I A, represented myself, or B, like the way I made that person feel. Like there's 1,001 examples that we can always think of. What would you say is maybe your biggest? And on the flip, like, what did you learn from it?
So to be 100% honest, I don't know that I necessarily have this like looming thing that I'm like, this is the biggest regret in my life. I think sometimes if you look at life that way, if you're like, oh, this one situation or this one thing, I can't get over, I can't let go of either what happened, whether it was your fault or someone else's fault or a situation's fault or whatever it might be that created this thing that you feel like you regret, right? I feel like it almost gives you this sense of negativity. I think by far, I have made many mistakes in my lifetime. Definitely things or situations I wish I would have reacted differently or done something differently. You know, we're not all our best selves all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, those moments you're for sure look back on, and you're like, wow, I really could do this in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if I didn't have some of those things in my life, I would not be anywhere close to the person that I am right now and the person that I strive to be in the future, the person that I want to be for my family and for my wife and for my friends and, you know, my colleagues and anybody else, you know, that I interact with in my life. I think I try and do my best as a person to learn from my mistakes. But I think if we hold on to something as this, again, this overlooming regret in life, it always stores this spot of negativity instead of something that I'm really trying to do as I get a little bit older is to not necessarily focus on something that's maybe a negative situation as being negative, but looking at it and trying to give it like a positive, like what is it I can learn from this? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, don't let me fool you. Sometimes that is a very difficult task.
Always.
Right.
Always.
But I think if I keep working at it and striving for it, like anything else, if I want to get mm-hmm. there, you know, you have to work at it. And I think like your careers or having a spouse or having a partner or having, you know, financial stability or whatever those things that people equate as success. I think if you don't try and learn from the mistakes that you made, you can't really have those things or, you know, mm-hmm. move to a better level of clarity as trying to be a more positive person.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Cause you're right. Like it creates such a negativity. It almost reminds me of like a grudge in some, yeah. in an obscure way. It's kind of like a grudge where you somehow can't move on from the regret because you have moved on. You're still here. You're X amount of years or days or hours past it. But if you don't move forward from it, then you're living in that state. You're living in that past moment. And it just consumes you.
For sure. And I think, yeah. you know, like I said, sometimes in those moments when it's happening, it's really difficult. Mm-hmm. And it may even take you some time to be able to turn that perspective around and be like, okay, you know, why, how can I put a more positive spin on this or, you know, how do I turn this into something different than what it is? You know, I'm definitely not saying it happens like, oh, the situation just happened. I'm like, well, let's just be positive about it. Right.
No, no, because there's emotions that we feel.
Yeah. 100%. You're like a human being and
thank God.
I think sometimes I try, I cannot something sure. My wife does help me to try and realize. But yeah, I think, you know, I think I just try and look at things not as much as a regret as, you know, more of a mistake or something I can learn from and do differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
And positive experiences of your life lead you to who you are as a person.
Yeah. That's the weird thing about it. That's one of the staple questions I ask people because I'm fascinated by the responses. And every time it comes up, I have the same feeling. And a lot of people share the same sentiments that you and I do that like, while there are things you're kind of like, man, I wish I handled that differently. It's like, well, kind of like I say it lightly because I wouldn't be here potentially with the same makeup and same dynamic and same feeling and thoughts without having experienced that and then grown from it the way that I did. So it's like, well, yeah, I wish if another person involved, it's like, well, yeah, I wish I didn't hurt that person. But at the same time, I wish I learned the lesson from it. So,
right.
So it is, it's a very kind of oxymoronic idea.
Yeah.
And you made a natural segue. Something that I'm also very passionate about, Elena, is just gratitude. I think that, well, in general, you're a grateful person. It's very obvious from what we've talked about so far and just from my extent of knowing you. But being grateful and living a life of gratitude is almost, I think, a conscious effort because I think it's not this like cliche all is bliss mentality. It's more so like we're saying with this regret thing, like finding the growth opportunity, finding the good in something. And like for me, it's like, okay, where do I see like God in something and or where is the blessing in it? And you actively decide that this is how you want to do something. Like it's an active thing,
right?
What role would you say gratitude plays in your life and how have you fostered an ability to live that?
Yeah. You got some good questions, Joe.
Thanks, Elena.
I try to be grateful for all of the things that I have in my life. You know, I know there's obviously always, no matter what someone's life is, there's always going to be people that have more, whether that's, you know, materialistic things or spiritual things or whatever. There's always people that are going to have less than you do. And it took me a very long time to get to a better mentality, and not that mine is by any means done growing or evolving. But I just try and look at things, you know, nothing is guaranteed in your life. And so, you know, I'm grateful that I wake up every day. I'm grateful to have a roof over my head and to be, you know, I'm grateful to be able to be cultivating the type of career that I want to have. I think it's just always important to, like you said, I don't know, just to have gratitude. I mean, if you don't, I think then, I mean, for lack of a better way, those are like people that get on my nerves.
Yeah.
Like, look,
it's so, you know, prissy.
That are like constantly, and don't get me wrong, there are things I complain about. There are things that I'm like, I just wish this was different.
Yeah.
You know, out of my control. I can't change it. I can't, whatever. You know, we all feel that way. But at the same time, if I'm not grateful for the things that I have, then, you know, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're always striving to be better, but I think it's really important to be grateful for what is right now.
Absolutely.
You know,
and like those things that are tough, I think to be grateful for it and as opposed to like the explicit just complaining about it, we can live gratefully by actively trying to make it better. So if there's something that grinds your gears, if there's something that's aggravating and annoying, the complaining is what it is, but now back it with something, try and make it better, try and change it. Like instead of just being like a narc on it, that doesn't fix anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's okay. For example, right. Mm-hmm. So people, when they talk to me about going to Fashion Week and doing that, they're like, oh, you know, that's gotta be so cool. And I meet really cool people and you meet celebrities or you do this and you do that. And yes, but for me, when I'm there, it's a lot of work, right? And there are times where I'm just like, I have worked for like 20 hours. I am so tired. I'm going to go to sleep and sleep for a few hours and I'm going to get up and I'm going to do it all again and this, that. But even when I'm like at that point where I'm like so tired,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, I'm grateful to be here and be tired because I'm learning. Like I'm still, you know, getting something
of course
back as well, you know? And I think that it's important to show that you're grateful by giving that to other people. Like,
that's awesome.
I'm super grateful for the people that I've met through Aveda, right? And all of the amazing opportunities they've given me. And that's a huge part of what made me want to work towards being an educator for Aveda, because mm-hmm. there are so many people that I was grateful to who didn't have to give me opportunities, didn't have to, you know, give me that kind of starting level of being able to build my career, you know? So I show my gratitude for that to those people by trying to continue on what they've done for me and be able to do that for someone else. You know, I think being grateful isn't always just for yourself. It's, you have to show that as well.
For sure.
And that's being able to, I don't know, give back or give to other people, mm-hmm. however you want to look at that.
Yeah. That butterfly effect, right? It's so pivotal to being an educator, to doing things for others. You have a great mentality, Elena. It's been awesome hearing about it. I'm serious.
Thanks, Joe.
As we kind of conclude here, And I say kind of in the sense that I would love to have you back on sometime. If you ever have more, you'd love to shoot the breeze on. But as we draw this episode to a close, do you have any kind of closing remarks, any sort of exit statements that you want to address to someone specific, to a group specifically, to the general audience?
I mean, you know, no person in particular or anything like that. I think, you know, kind of just where I'm trying to go with my life and like I said, my mentality and things like that. I think, you know, there've been some very difficult or dark times in my life. And I think I just, the only thing I would ever say to somebody is just, if you want it to be different, make it different. You know what I mean? If be out there, put yourself out there, do the thing. And if you do that, you know, it's going to happen and you can, I think, transform yourself and your life and your mentality into what you want it to be. If you're, you know, willing to work on that. And while you're doing that, I think we just the whole world at this point in time, just like be a good person to other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like be a kind human being. You don't even have to give or do this or do that, but like, just like be a nice person, smile at somebody. Like,
yeah,
it literally makes people stay.
Right. Right. Awesome. Yeah. Lana. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's the truth. Being kind and just being a good person. I, first of all, I don't feel like it's that hard. And secondly, it's so important. It's so important. It's, sounds basic, but for whatever reason, we as people generally struggle. So
it's a struggle out there for that these days. Like, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think that's it. That's like my whole thing. Just like try and be an okay human being.
And on that.
Yeah.
Elena, thank you so much for being on and for taking the time to talk with me and share your stories and the great wisdom that you have. You have a unique story and you have a great ability to resonate with people and to share those stories. So thank you again. And it really has been a pleasure having you on, Elena, to episode, I don't even know, like 27 or something like that. 26 maybe of the Chats with Clark podcast. We're getting there a little bit. Yeah. So Elena, thank you again.
Oh, Joe, thank you so much for having me. It was really my pleasure to chat with you this evening. And anytime, I'd love to chat with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'll see you in just a couple weeks for a hiccup. I'm needing it. We're getting close.
You better check the calendar. I think it's next week.
Really?
Yeah.
Even better. I'm like, it's getting shaggy. I'm ready. So even better. I thought it was longer out. So that's, I'm glad you said that.
Yes.
But awesome. Everyone, this is the great Elena Kathleen. I will post all of the things that we've talked about, whether it's like a link to just general Aveda information, to Elena's Instagram, anything you might have wanted to discuss further with her. I'm sure she'd be more than happy to chat with you. Check it all out. I'll post it in the link below. If you haven't yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. Hit the subscribe button. If you're on YouTube, it's down below. If you're on Apple or if you're on Spotify, hit that button at the top. We want you tuning in. We want you listening to the Chats with Clark podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Joe Clark. Thanks so much for tuning in.